Hi, I'm Nick Gregoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. Episode 53 brings a returning guest, Paul Moran, who is one of my favorite people both on or off the mats. He is a bastion of positive energy and good vibrations within the Jiu-Jitsu community, and he does so much for all of us. So I'm so excited to have him back on the show and to be able to discuss what's been happening in his life. He just got his black belt a couple of months ago. That's an awesome thing as well. And we have a great conversation in which he talks about some of the latest battles he's been fighting and how he manages to stay so positive all the time. Before we dive into the episode, just want to thank everyone who has supported Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood and has supported the podcast over the last 18 months. If you haven't yet supported us and you want to do so, please head on over to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com and get yourself a new gi or a belt or a rash guard or any one of our instructional programs. Just use the coupon code podcast and you'll get 10% off. Also, if you're thinking about trying an online academy, please don't hesitate to check out my one that I've just spent 2 years building. It's the Master Academy. You can head over to jiu-jitsumasteracademy.com and you can also use the coupon code podcast to get a discount on that. Also, guys, if you want to support us on Patreon, we'd really appreciate that. The link is patreon.com/jiu-jitsubrotherhood. And if you give us a donation of $5 or more, we're going to send you a free copy of my best-selling book, The Black Belt Blueprint. So check that out. Okay, guys, have a fantastic week. And here's episode number 53. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. And I'm here with someone I can call a true friend. I've known him for many years. And he's also someone I can call a true warrior. And that is my friend, Paul Moran. You guys have heard him on the show before. The episode was titled Killing the Lion, or I think it was actually entitled Just Another Lion to Kill. And that was over a year ago. And I'm glad you're still with us, Paul, and I'm glad you're still killing lions. I'm happy to have you on the show.
Thank you, brother. It's good to be back. I miss... For those that don't know, we had our own show a ways back, the mm-hmm. Journey podcast. That was always fun. So, yeah, it's great to be back. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I just realized that it's been about a year. So, happy anniversary for Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood as well, coming up on your 50, I don't know, first or second episode. It seems like a year.
I think this is 53, man, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Man, so much has happened since we last spoke. I can hear in your voice. I almost don't recognize the sound of your voice because, as we discussed earlier, you were very weighed down by some heavy goings on in your life last time we spoke.
Yeah.
And now there's just a newfound strength and vitality in your voice, and it just makes me so happy to hear that. What's been going on?
Well, thank you. Yeah, a lot of changes. So last time we spoke, I was going through. So just to catch some people that may not know, catch them up to speed. I've had cancer for 6 years. It started as rectal cancer, and then I had surgery to remove that, and I was on a temporary ileostomy in recovery. They found that it had spread to my liver. Eventually, I had 3 different liver resections. I've had 2 lung ablations, chemo, radiation, all sorts of stuff. So I'm stage 4 now. And I am on chemo that I take at home for like 2 weeks, and then I'm off for a week, and then I go in, get some infusions and whatnot. So my treatment's pretty stable, even though it's at stage 4. In the time that we've, and thank you to UCLA, Dr. Busatil and Dr. Hecht out there and Dr. Brete here in Vegas, and all the people that have supported me along the way, especially Scramble helped pay a lot of my bills with the rash guard that we did a while back. So huge thank you to Scramble, Matt and Ben and everybody out there. But in the span of the past year, I had those 2 surgeries. I also started going to Deer Park Monastery and studying kind of secular Buddhism and engaged Buddhism. I got to go to Finland and help Elliot Kelly with his run at ADCC and do a seminar, thanks to Inverted Gear, over in Bergen Grappling. In Norway. So did a lot of that. And yeah, I've just been going to retreats. I went through a divorce. A lot of people ask, like, where's Open Mat Radio? Where's the journey? Things like that. Have every intent to bring them back, but just kind of wave after wave of things have hit me. I kind of live between Vegas and Venice Beach, where I get a lot of treatment at UCLA and support there. So yeah, I mean, it's been a very, very wild ride. I've been able to get my black belt and brown belt while I was going through treatment. I got my black belt last year. It was pretty amazing. My coach, Sergio Pena, had invited his good friend and your friend, dare I say coach, Mauricio Gomes, mm-hmm. along with Marcio Simas and Elliot Kelly, and then a group of our black belts. And I was lucky enough to be promoted to black belt last year, right before Sergio and Mauricio got their red and white belts, I think the next day. So that was a huge, huge, huge honor. And they definitely set a high bar. I don't know if I'll make that red and white, but I will definitely die trying to live up to the ideals that those guys set. Old school is the way to go.
Tell me about the monastery. I'm very interested. What did you go and do there, and how long were you there?
Yeah.
And what did you learn?
So that would probably take another 8 hours for sure. But I started going to Deer Park because I've Tom Callis, who's a old school Taekwondo guy, and he mm-hmm. brought BJ Penn to Jiu-Jitsu, and a lot of people know Tom. He introduced me to Thich Nhat Hanh's writings when I was going through some rough times. And I found, you know, you and I would talk about Osho, or we talk about different, you know, spiritual teachers and whatnot. And I think there's, like Jiu-Jitsu, you find what works for you. Your guard may be different than mine, but they both could be effective, and you got to try everything a little. So Thich Nhat Hanh really speaks to me in the engaged Buddhism style. There's not a lot or any really religion to it as far as praising a god or anything like that. So when I go to Deer Park, it's a retreat center in Escondido, and you know, you spend 5 days meditating, eating vegetarian or vegan. You wake up early, meditate, and then you do walking meditation, sitting meditation, eating meditation. And when I say meditation, it's, you know, we do a lot of mindfulness training, and really it's putting your energy and everything into monotasking instead of multitasking and immersing yourself within the experience. And then, you do some working meditation, and everything it slows everything down. One of my favorite things at Deer Park is every 15 minutes, a bell goes off and everyone stops mm-hmm. and takes three breaths.
That's great.
And you don't realize until maybe your second or third day. I joke that it's like going to kindergarten for life. We learn to breathe. We learn to eat. We learn to walk. You learn to redo everything, because you'd be so amazed at how quickly our habit energy can kind of take us and push us through what society says.
Now, habit energy, what does that refer to exactly?
So habit energy is, think of the habits that you have in your daily life. Sometimes they can get going like a snowball and keep going without us being mindful or attentive to it. So one thing might be, you know, I may have a habit while I'm driving on the 15 to get really angry when someone cuts me off, and I want to flick them off and show them that mudra, you know, and that's habit energy. But my intention is, I don't want to hurt anyone in life. I want everyone to be happy, healthy, safe, and at peace. So I know that habit isn't really my true intention. So I have to check that habit and then check my intention and see what's really going on. Mm-hmm. And then build habits that support that. So I have a little plastic Buddha sitting by my windshield, so that when I look up and I'm about to scream, that's my old habit. That's anger. I don't need that. You know, look for the Buddha in me. Look for the Buddha in the other person. And when I say that, you know, I may say Buddha, but it's really just looking at, you know, our equality. Say namaste. Say whatever you want. But I don't want to turn it into a religious type thing. It's just an honoring of each person. So when we recognize those habits, we're able to kind of free ourselves from them, or at least look at them objectively.
Yeah, I understand that. So, yeah, that makes total sense to me. I've seen many times in my life habits. It's strange that the bad ones, I don't know how, if I ever meet God, or if there is a God that I can connect with one day, I want to ask him, why is it always, we've spoken about this before, like, why is it always going to be so difficult? Like, the example I was going to use is that bad habits can start so easily, and they can be maintained so easily. But to create a good habit requires so much energy, and you have to stay on it and stay focused on it, or else you just fall out of the habit. And why is it going to be like that? Why couldn't it just be equal? Why couldn't they both be equally difficult or easy?
Because we'd get eaten a lot, I think, as cavemen. So let me explain that. So we have a negativity bias, and it's a survival instinct, right? So if you and I are walking down a path as cavemen, and we come across, you know, a nice apple tree, I might pick an apple, you might have one, oh, wow, this is nice, and we keep going. You know, it didn't really change our day that good or that bad. But then when we come across a cave and a wolf jumps out, you and I go booking through the forest, running away from it, we're going to remember where that wolf is, because in our survival, our daily life, that's a strong, strong thing to know, to remember.
Mm-hmm,
7 times stronger than us remembering where the apple tree is. So we're hardwired to interpret negative experiences as stronger or more prevalent than the good ones. So we need to build in practice and time for gratitude and acknowledgement of the good things that are all going on, because we are hyper-tuned to the negative. So I talk about it, if you want to think about jiu-jitsu injuries, how many times do we complain about, oh, my bad knee, but we never talk about, oh, my right elbow's working, my right knee's working, my shin doesn't hurt. You know, we forget about all that.
Yeah.
So we're kind of hardwired for the negative. And then if we build in time or practices to kind of step back and get a bigger picture, it helps.
I don't know if that answer is true, but I'll take it.
I'll say that's a blend of my old psychology. I was a school psychologist and kind of Buddhist psychology as well.
Uh-huh.
So the numbers may be different, but there is that kind of negativity bias.
For sure. I mean, I have seen with my own mind how easy it is if I don't control it and if I don't master it. It can very quickly spiral into a vortex of malcontent and negativity. It's this constant. This one spiritual teacher, he speaks of cleaning the slate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you always, every day, you got to clean the slate of your mind. You got to clean it using your meditation or your gratitude practice or whatever it is, because the tendency is for it to just naturally become dirty. And that's something that. Yeah, unfortunately, I've had to accept it as the way it is. It's pretty challenging, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's as challenging as jiu-jitsu is your first day on the mat. You know, it's all new. It's all different. You think you know how to grapple and fight, you know, being a human being. And then you start to learn some stuff and go, wow, what I really need to do is very counterintuitive in order to be a successful grappler.
Mm-hmm.
And Noah Levine, who I study with, and I'm going to – actually, he'll be leading a Vipassana retreat, a silent retreat.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, first one I've ever done. So that's coming up in Malibu in September with Rebel Saint
cool.
Meditation Society. So that'll be a new experience. But he talks about going against the stream. And what that means is a lot of, you know, society pushes us in one direction. And to really free ourselves from a lot of that pain and suffering, we have to go against the stream. And it's not getting lost in indulgences and things like that.
Is that how you characterize the stream, is indulgences, or how would you characterize it?
I would say that it's things that on the surface look like they make us happy, but genuinely don't. You know, it's like the pixie sticks of life. It's like, oh, wow, this is great for 30 seconds. And then what, your blood sugar spikes, it's gone. You don't even remember it in 5 minutes, as opposed to, you know, eating the apple. But when you're in a certain phase of life, you're just going to the pixie stick. You're like, oh, the apple's not even, you know, on my radar. And then, like, the more you practice, the easier it is to eat the apple, and the pixie stick now tastes gross. Like, I can't even eat candy anymore. living at the monastery off and on, I mean, it's only 5 days at a time, so it's not like I'm living, but I became vegetarian just after a week there. It's like I never felt better eating that food. It tastes amazing. And since then, I've been vegetarian, you know, but I had to be exposed to that way of living in order to really understand it and dive in. Otherwise, I would have just kept doing what I was doing.
Fair enough. So you've built that good habit energy, I guess. And,
yeah.
Well, you haven't built it. You're constantly building it is probably a better way to describe it.
Well, that's how they say, sorry, just one last thing about the retreats. That's what they say about the retreats is you go to the retreats to get into a community. And this is the one thing that, another analogy to jiu-jitsu, it's like trying to practice on your own versus with a team. When you're with people that have the common idea, that energy really is strong. And I don't just mean like this crazy hippie energy, but on a very practical matter, like seeing someone else eat mindfully encourages you to eat mindfully. Mm. You know, when you're running through a city, that doesn't always happen. So retreats are great to get you kind of centered and in that place. And then it's on you to carry that energy with you into your daily practices. But when society gets hard and it gets rough, then go back to the retreat or go back to your sangha. I had never realized how important it was to have a community.
For sure.
That's a big thing.
I've been experiencing, or I'm firsthand living proof of that because at this point in my life, I'm very isolated. Mm-hmm. Besides going to different cities to teach seminars every now and then, I'm at home a lot. And, because, I run my own business and my business partner's in England, I've been lacking in a community. I go to the gym a couple of times a week, or a few times a week, but those spaces in between jiu-jitsu sessions, man, I'm alone, dude. I'm alone, and I can feel that it's not good for a human being to be alone like that.
Yeah.
And that when you speak of community, I do understand how important that is. And those, as I said, those few times a week that we're all able to get to the jiu-jitsu mat and that we're all able to connect with people, they're so important for us because I don't want to sound like a downer, but the nature of modern life, even for those who work in offices and things like that, sometimes it can be incredibly lonely, right? It's sometimes a very alienating existence. And I always say that jiu-jitsu, it's just an example. There are other things that you could use, but jiu-jitsu is a great one. It's nothing to do with the wrestling and the tapping people out and the secret tricks that you learn. It's just about being with people and just like experiencing the journey with them.
Yeah, I think there's a tremendous amount of truth to that. And I think the bond that is created in jiu-jitsu is unique because the trust that you have with your training partners to literally let go of a choke, otherwise you could go unconscious or die or, break your limb, like that's a heightened level of sensitivity and understanding. And we have to have that. So there's nothing worse than walking into a foreign gym and feeling the negativity. And there's nothing better than walking into your home gym or a friendly gym and feeling that camaraderie. So it's like you got to know that energy that's there. And
it's so interesting that you mentioned that negativity if you walk into a different gym, or the camaraderie if you walk into your own gym. I experienced something the other day. I was teaching, I had a class scheduled to be taught, and I arrived on the mat and there was this other black belt there, and I watched myself start to get, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but I could sense that there was this kind of boundary that I put up and this kind of like machismo kind of bullshit. And I was like, what the fuck is this, dude? I'm just very happy that I was able to recognize it and get rid of it as quickly as possible. You know, but I have been to places where that is the dominant paradigm. Like everyone is your enemy. Everyone's coming to take something for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about me and how good I am and how much I can smash you. And dude, that's just as far from where I want to be as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So Paul, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about,
sure.
It's kind of difficult for me to bring this up because I think you listened to the last episode of my show, I discussed this epiphany I had about stopping all comparison. And that's been a powerful theme for my life over the past 3 weeks. I've really, really tried to focus on eliminating comparison, but the fact is, compared to you, both I and pretty much everyone else I know has it pretty fucking easy. There's no other way to put it. And I don't even consider my life very easy at all. So I can't even imagine the scale of difficulty of what you've been through. I mean, I know when I get a head cold, it feels like the end of the fucking world.
Yeah.
And How have you done this, man? I've asked you a similar question before, but how have you done this? How have you held on, and how have you still been able to get on planes to Helsinki and stay a bastion of the jiu-jitsu community and put good energy out there and help people? And how have you done it, man? Tell me, I want to know.
A lot of different ways, many, many, many different ways, and definitely not alone. And thank you for that. Gratitude is a very powerful thing. And I think listening to your last episode, you talk a lot about that. That's powerful. I just did an interview with Bernardo Faria, and we talked a lot about that as well, and just building gratitude. But I fundamentally changed how I look at the challenges in my life. I think that was a big thing, is where I used to look at everything as, like, why is this happening to me? And this isn't right. I've done everything that I'm supposed to. This is unfair. I did the anger. I did the sadness. I've been clinically depressed and all that kind of stuff. And it never got me anywhere. So now I just face all this stuff as a challenge, and an opportunity to practice. So I'm grateful. Like, when my lung got collapsed, normally I do mindfulness of breath stuff to bring me down from anxiety. When my lung collapsed and I was drowning from the inside, I couldn't do that. But I was grateful that I had another practice of, my I am safe mantra, and I could repeat that and calm myself down. And that was a great learning experience. I ended up with 15 days of psychosis, ICU-induced psychosis, but I learned from all that. I didn't get scared of it. You learn from it. If you treat every single experience as something that you can learn and be better from, it's hard to be angry at them or hate them. And if knowing that anger and hate are not productive, it's like, why bother? So the Buddha always talked about I don't know if I've shared this with you, but the no second arrows. Have I talked to you about no second arrows?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar.
So, and again, I'm not a Dharma teacher, so I don't mean to be too bold to speak this out, but it's a good story, I think, regardless. The Buddha said that going through life is kind of like going through a battle, and in the battlefield, you're going to get hit with arrows. So if an arrow strikes you, and that could be, anything bad that happens to your health or life or finances, your family, whatever, just anything bad is going to hit you. It's natural. It's what we do next is what's important. If we get angry at it, if we get resentful, if we push people away, if we get depressed, all those things are like taking a second arrow and slamming it into the exact same point of the first one. That not only is it going to hurt, but it's going to hurt worse. It's going to do worse damage. However, if we say no to that second arrow and just go, ah, shit, I got an arrow in my arm. I better address that. What can I do to care for myself and heal it? As opposed to, oh, why me? That's energy that actually can do something. So I say no second arrows.
It's I'm reminded of a book called Letting Go: The Pathway to Surrender, and in it, the author he lists emotions on a scale, and right at the bottom is despair. And he says even anger is better than despair, because with despair, you don't have the energy to do anything, whereas anger can at least motivate you to do something. And then as you move higher, higher and up, I think gratitude is really high up on the list. But so when you said to me that when that first arrow hits you, and then you go, oh, woe is me, like that despair is the second arrow. You are you're crippling yourself further instead of putting the splint on or the bandage on.
100%. 100%. So one of the other things that I wanted to circle back to is you were talking about comparison. And Sister Deng Nhiem, Sister D, who wrote an amazing book that totally changed my life, Mindfulness is Medicine, I recommend to everybody. But she gave a great Dharma talk about comparisons. And what she was talking about is that there's a superiority complex, an inferiority complex, and an equality complex. And basically how they work is sometimes, we think that we're better than someone, and that, oh, because I'm higher than them in rank or status, I deserve this or that. And sometimes we think that we're less than someone, like, oh, because they're this, from this family, or they're this, shape or whatever, they're better than me. But then there's also an equality complex that, oh, well, Nick's a black belt, I'm a black belt, so that means that we're equal. And it's like, no, everyone is different, everyone is unique. I've gone through a lot of stuff. I have a friend, Byron, who's going through brain cancer right now that makes, you know, my experience seem like a cakewalk. You know, he gets to grapple from some days he's in a wheelchair. Some days he's able to grapple. You know, I can't wrap my head around that. I find a tremendous amount of strength and support from him and how he lives his life. And then people say that to me, but I have no idea what everyone's dealing with. So I never want to judge anyone on their struggle or say that mine's better or worse or different than theirs. It's just, it's unique, you know?
I appreciate that. That is pure wisdom. And I'm actually just looking for that book, Mindfulness is Medicine. Is that the title?
Mindfulness as Medicine.
As Medicine. Okay.
By Sister Dang Nem. She's amazing. Sister D.
I found it. I'm adding it to my wish list. It's interesting that you mentioned those insights on comparison, because as I was saying in the last show, that big insight that I received, which was stop all comparison, actually came shortly after I'd started to do a Buddhist chant. And I think that in some way unlocked that knowledge, or allowed a doorway to open to allow that knowledge through. So Buddhism is something I'm becoming more and more interested in. My one reservation about it as a method to approach life, or a mechanism with which to increase your ability to cope with life, is I find that it can be quite cold. One of my friends, who's a lovely human being, he was with me in Thailand. We were spending a lot of time hanging out together. Thailand is obviously a Buddhist country. I love Thailand very, very deeply. So I don't want to speak ill of it. But he went to Bali right after Thailand. And Bali is, it's not Hindu, but it is, it has a sort of animist tradition, if I'm not mistaken. I should probably look this up. But what he said is, when he came back from Bali, he realized that the overwhelming difference, it is Balinese Hinduism. He said the overwhelming difference was that form of Hinduism was so colorful and so joyous, and there was a lot of dancing, and there was a lot of joie de vie, you know, there was a lot of life and a lot of energy, and it wasn't this kind of contained, clinical, don't get too happy because then you won't get too sad, stay on the middle path type of very sanitized kind of approach that Buddhism has. And that's one of the things that, I guess it's a comparison, I shouldn't do it, but that's one of the things that it caused me to be reluctant from embracing Buddhism entirely. What are your thoughts on that?
A couple things. I think that it would be interesting to take you into, you know, you've been to my gym with Sergio Pena, and you've been to a lot of different gyms. Like, we could go to Eddie Bravo's 10th Planet, you know, and say, hey, these are both jiu-jitsu, and it's going to be a very different feel, different everything, right? When I go to Deer Park and I follow the Plum Village tradition with Thich Nhat Hanh, it is, man, I've never smiled so much in my life. It is a lot of happiness. But where I was going back to before is it's a strange phenomenon that you almost have to dip down below the surface level stuff. And what I find is truly happiness is, you know, eating in silence with 100 people overlooking a sunset on this huge hour-long hike that we took, you know, and you can see the ocean on one side, mountains on the other. And there's a tranquility and a peacefulness and a happiness that's generated from that I've never experienced anywhere else, but it takes that experience to get there. So sometimes it's the, you know, happiness is the way, it's not the end point, you know? And there are a lot of different schools of Buddhism. So Thich Nhat Hanh, when he goes, he's a Zen master, but doesn't really teach in the traditional Zen way. And if you go to a Zendo, you'll see people sitting, you know, 18 hours sitting in Sazen or whatever. To me, that's crazy. That's punishing your body and hurting. To them, that's how they're liberating their mind. Thich Nhat Hanh goes into those places and would say, you all need to smile more. Like, you need to just That's be cool. happier.
Yeah.
I think if you use it as a way of, really the Buddha was, Jon Kabat-Zinn has a great Google talk online that I actually used to share that talk and your old meditation notes. You had a one page thing up a long time ago that I used to share all the time to beginners. But that the, or Robina Korten actually says this, that the Buddha was the first cognitive psychologist. So really, if you want to look at it as a way of controlling your being so that your thoughts, emotions aren't driving the show, but you are, you can think of it that way and take out a lot of different elements and make it your own, just like you would in jiu-jitsu, you know?
That's great. That's a fantastic way to look at it. Yeah, I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into Buddhism, and I'm going to look for, look for the ones that seem to have some more life-affirming, life-positive elements to them. I don't really like the idea. In fact, I've recently found out that I was going to say I don't really like the idea that the Buddhist tenet that life is suffering. I've never enjoyed that, and I've never wanted to start believing that because I'm. I really do feel that life does bring you a lot of what you expect it to bring you in some ways. It's not a one-to-one ratio, but
yes.
There definitely is a correlation. And if you expect life to be suffering, it is going to be suffering. I subsequently found out that the Buddha never said life is suffering. He said life contains suffering.
Yes.
And those are two very, very different things.
Yes.
I'm getting more and more interested in Buddhism, especially after that incredible wisdom that chant unlocked. Paul, my brother, I know you always have your fingers in lots of different pies, and you're spinning a lot of jiu-jitsu plates and a lot of cool things in the community. A lot of cool projects are happening because of you. If the people listening to this want to support you or want to see more about the things that you do, where should they go?
I almost had Open Mat Radio up and going again last year after an event I did for Tap Cancer Out, but some things didn't work with some people that I thought were going to really help get the show back going. So really that stuff's all just kind of on the back burner. So the best way is probably my Instagram. It's just Paul Open Mat Radio, all one word. Find me on Facebook. The Open Mat Radio Facebook page is still going. We still have the Journey page is still up there if you need to get a hold of me through that. Check that once in a while. If you're in Las Vegas, please stop by and check out Sergio Pena's Academy. He's a red and white belt. We also have another red and black belt there and a grip of black belts.
Sorry to interrupt you, Paul.
Yeah.
But it's by the time this goes out, it will be Monday or Tuesday, and the World Masters starts in Vegas on Thursday. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. And that's just our regular, like Sergio is like always, we always have Sergio teaching. He teaches almost every class. He's coaching Ultimate Fighter right now. I don't know how much I can talk about that, but
okay.
He's always there. And then Alfredo is a red and black belt, you know, that is always there as well. So that's our standard. That's normal.
So, I mean, I think it would be great if I know there's a lot of people who are listening to this that are going to be in Vegas in a couple of days, so they might already be there by the time this airs.
Sure.
If you want to hang out with a really cool guy and just share some good energy, I strongly suggest you get in touch with Paul. And Paul, I'm pretty confident in saying that you're the kind of guy who is more than happy to meet with people and just awesome. Paul, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and you're one of my heroes, my brother.
You're the same.
You're a very powerful man, and you've cultivated the diamond soul. I'm sure of it.
Well, one thing that I definitely just everyone has to realize is there's nothing special about me. I've done nothing that anyone else can't. Like, everyone can do what I did. Just no one's been put in some of the situations I have. So you're a lot. People are a lot stronger than they give themselves credit for. They just haven't always had an opportunity to show it. So just remember that.
That is exactly what an enlightened person would have said to that compliment. So you're just digging a deeper hole for yourself.
Thank you, brother.
Okay. Peace out, Paul.
Peace.
Never ceases to amaze me just how Paul remains optimistic and focused and positive despite these incredible challenges that he is having to face in his life. He's been dealt a really difficult hand, and yet he still gives as much of himself as he possibly can. And he, to me, really is the epitome of what a martial artist and a warrior really is. And what a pleasure to be able to have him back on the show. I consider it such a privilege and an honor to know that guy, and it just puts everything into perspective for me every time I speak to him. If you want to support Paul, please go check out his podcast, Open Mat Radio. It's a fantastic show. He's had it on the back burner for a while, but there's still loads of cool episodes out there, and there's loads of interesting black belts that he interviews. Okay, guys, that's it for episode 53. I will see you in another week or two. Peace out.